Technology is an integral part of our lives. We use it every day, and it extends our access to information through things we can't even see. With technology surrounding us and growing at such a fast rate, knowledge of how to use this resource and stay safe in the meantime is imperative. Welcome to CyberSafe News and Views, where we answer questions and share information to keep you in the know and cybersafe.
Hello and welcome to CyberSafe News and Views. My name is Lee Frazier, and I'll be your guide.
Hi, Lee. We've been receiving some questions from some of our viewers, and we just kind of wanted to have a question and answer session. Just thank you for joining us. One of the biggest questions that we've had lately is, what is a common way a business without an IT budget can be hacked? How can somebody get into my network or my computer?
Yeah, and that's a great question. There's a number of ways that that can actually happen. One way that has happened for a number of people that I've been associated with was that they're just browsing the web, they're browsing the internet, and a little pop-up comes up in front of their browser. And it's impossible to tell where they are. The browser becomes unusable, and generally it makes itself full screen, so you can't get out of it. And it asks you then for, hey, do you accept this or not? And if you click anything, they install software and you're hacked. And they also ask you, they put up some message saying, your computer has a virus, you need to reach out to us. And frequently it will be someone like Microsoft or Facebook, or name your big customer, big company that might have some information for you. It might be Google or Alphabet or whatever it is, but they're going to leverage a name with that and say, call this number. I had a friend of mine do that recently, and the only thing that got him out of that was that he called the number, and then the person on the other end didn't speak English well enough. And so that's one way that you can be hacked, because you end up calling them, they tell you what to do, and you give them access unknowingly because you think they're Microsoft or whoever they're trying to impersonate. The other way is by actually clicking on it, not even calling them. It gives them access. So when these types of things happen, this is social engineering. They're trying to get you to call and do what they say because they're the authority. Or to click on a button and say, well, of course, yeah, I don't want this virus. Click OK. And then they download software and immediately, you may not be compromised or know it that you're compromised immediately, but they're looking through your files. They're encrypting files to keep them from you. Just a number of different things. So the only way to get out of that one is actually close the browser. But that's a common way that we see people, and it's easy to get out of. Don't call the number and close your browser, restart your browser, and you're generally good to go. That's a common way that we see, though.
Okay. Well, when you're talking about clicking on stuff, how do I recognize a phishing email, or how do I recognize when I shouldn't click on something?
Yeah, another great question. When you're in your email and it just and you're looking for a fish, you want to look for the type of message. Generally, your phishing emails want you to make a quick, decisive action. A very real customer example that I had, he was going to pay his electric bill that day, and in the morning he viewed his phone and it said, you haven't paid your electric bill, pay here now. And it was a fish. Had he clicked the button, had he actually gone through with it, and he started to, but he didn't complete the process. They were asking for payment via some gift card, like, you know, Visa gift card. Well, that's kind of weird. But look for an urgent message needing you to take action quickly. Look for, you know, mouse over the email address that it's coming from. They can fake what it looks like, but when you mouse over it and hover, then it will show you the actual email address it's coming from. And typically it won't be from that sender. Also look for familiarity. So, you know, if you shop at Home Depot or have a Home Depot card or whatever card you might have, or your bank, they're going to send an email and they're just blasting these out. Sometimes they have some information, but look for that, to that familiarity, and hover over that address. Make sure it's from homedepot.com, not some other address. You know, if it's an FBI or the IRS is emailing you, it's not going to be irs.gov. It is going to be irs.gov, not irs.com or anything else. And then the last thing, if you really want to get around this, when you see this email message and it says, hey, we're going to close your bank account, or you bounced a check, or whatever the urgent action is, go straight out to your bank. Go to a new browser tab and open your bank, log in, make sure everything looks correct, and then you can take corrective action and determine if it was valid or not.
Awesome. Thank you for answering that. We have one more question, and it's kind of a two-part question. We had someone write in saying that they didn't understand how anyone could access their computers. Anyway, they do have a password, but encryption had been mentioned. When they sought out the help of a computer professional in the area, that person informed them that the TPM is not enabled on computers because once it's enabled, it begins to break stuff. But we also know that encryption is required for certain compliance agencies and is a valid way to make a computer more secure. What would you say to this person?
Right. So this is a multifaceted question. First thing, you use an acronym, a TPM. It's a trusted platform module. It's a little device on your motherboard. And honestly, not all computers come with them. They still sell computers without a TPM. And so if your computer has a TPM, again, a trusted platform module, that's what stores your encryption key, stores it on your motherboard, and it's persistently stored. So whenever you boot, it looks for the TPM and then says, okay, it's valid, I'm not hacked, and it unencrypts your files and allows you access to them. So that's number one. Encryption is really to encode your data. And for many of those compliance programs that you were mentioning, your data has to be encrypted in motion when you're transporting it across your network or across the WAN, across the internet. And it has to be encrypted at rest. So, and both of those should make sense. If they don't, they can ask another question. But without that encryption, you can actually have your password hacked. So if you have a password to your Windows PC, laptop, desktop, whatever it is, and your device is not encrypted, I can hack that machine and get into it without your password. That's a natural known backdoor built in by Microsoft to allow people that forget their passwords to be able to reset their passwords. It also happens to be a huge security hole. So encryption, addressing one other question on there, they mentioned encryption can break things. And encryption by default doesn't break your computer in any way. But when you have an older computer, you can see a slowdown or potentially issues where it says, hey, I need you to enter your encryption key at boot time, causing you headaches. It doesn't cause you to lose your data, lose your computer, but it does cause headaches. For that, for rectifying that solution, that problem, really the solution is to replace your computer and keep it, you know, 3 to 4 years. We don't depend on any computers that are more than 3 years old for our day-to-day operations. So that's a multifaceted question. I hope I addressed all the aspects of the answer, but you need a good solid password. You need to have your device encrypted. Otherwise, I don't care how good your password is, it can be hacked.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to answer the questions. If you do have other questions, or if you have further questions based on the questions that we already answered, please write in. Let us know what you're thinking. We're happy to answer anything that you have in mind.
Thanks, Allison.
Yep. Thanks, Lee.
Some other questions that we have gotten are, what is the difference in computers? Am I more secure by using an Apple computer? And with all of the options that are available, what kind of computer should I get? In order to help with this question, we decided to put together an animated piece on different operating systems. Mac, Windows, and Linux are three major operating systems that power a significant portion of computers and devices. Some differences are obvious, while others are not so much. I have three guests here to share characteristic differences between each OS, Mac, Windows, and Linux. Let's start with the basics. On the user interface, what are the characteristics that make each operating system unique?
I've got this. So macOS is known for its sleek and intuitive user interface. The macOS design is consistent and user-friendly, with a focus on aesthetics.
Okay. Windows offers a more diverse range of user interfaces. Windows 10, for example, combines elements of the classic Windows interface with modern design principles.
Last but not least, Linux has various desktop environments available, such as GNOME, KDE, and XFCE. Users can choose an environment that suits their preferences, and Linux desktops are often highly customizable.
My next question is about software compatibility. Is any kind of software compatible with your OS?
No, macOS primarily supports software available on the Mac App Store and applications designed for macOS. Some cross-platform applications and tools are also available, but there are restrictions.
Windows is widely compatible with a vast range of software. Most commercial software and many games are developed for Windows, making it a popular choice for users who rely on specific applications.
Gotcha. Linux has a growing library of software available through package managers and repositories. However, software compatibility can be a challenge for specialized applications that are only developed for Windows or macOS.
So Linux has the most limited software compatibility, but one thing it is known for is its command line interface.
Absolutely. Linux is known for its powerful command line interface. Various distributions offer different terminals and shell environments, with the Bash shell being a common choice.
macOS uses Terminal. It's Unix-based and provides access to a wide array of command line tools.
Windows has a couple options here. The command prompt is available, and more recently, PowerShell's gained popularity. Windows Subsystem for Linux allows running Linux commands directly on Windows.
That kind of leads into our next questions. What are your customization and open source options?
I have something to say here. Linux is highly customizable, and being open source allows users to modify and distribute their versions. Users can choose from a wide range of desktop environments, themes, and software configurations.
So, macOS offers a limited level of customization compared to Linux, but is not open source.
Windows customization options have expanded, but it is still more restricted than Linux. Also, Windows operating system is not open source.
What about cost? I know this is often one of the biggest concerns for people purchasing a new computer.
macOS is available exclusively on Apple hardware, which tends to be relatively expensive compared to other options.
For Windows, the cost varies, but Windows operating systems are typically included in the price of pre-built PCs. There are retail versions that can also be purchased separately.
Most distributions of Linux are free and open source, making Linux an economical choice for users who prefer open software. So you should definitely consider Linux for your next computer choice.
What he really means is you should go with a Mac.
Or rather, join Team Windows.
Mac.
Windows.
Y'all, seriously? We're just trying to give people the information they need to make the best choice for them.
Oh, right.
Right, back on topic.
It's important to note that these differences are generalizations, and each operating system has its unique strengths and weaknesses. The choice between Mac, Windows, and Linux often depends on individual preferences, specific software requirements, and the intended use of the computer. One of the biggest concerns small businesses can face with any device is the question of, is my information secure? Let's compare the options with this in mind. What security architecture is built into each OS?
So, macOS is built on a Unix-based foundation, which inherently provides a solid security architecture. Features like Gatekeeper, XProtect, and FileVault all contribute to its security.
Windows has evolved its security significantly over the years. Features include Windows Defender, User Account Control, BitLocker, and various security policies.
Linux benefits from a Unix-like security model, with a strong emphasis on user privileges, separation of duties, and least privilege principles.
User account control was briefly mentioned in Windows. Do other operating systems have this?
macOS requires user authentication for system-level changes through the use of administrator passwords.
Windows utilizes user account control, also known as UAC, prompting users for confirmation when applications try to make system-level changes.
Linux implements a robust permission system where users can escalate privileges using tools like sudo.
So besides the changes I would make on the computer, how does the computer receive security updates?
macOS receives regular security updates, and Apple has a reputation for addressing vulnerabilities promptly.
Microsoft issues regular security updates, including monthly Patch Tuesday releases, to address known vulnerabilities.
Linux security updates are managed through package management systems, and distributions often provide timely updates to address vulnerabilities.
What about malware and antivirus?
macOS historically had fewer malware issues, but as its user base has grown, it has become a more attractive target. macOS includes built-in security features, and users can opt for third-party antivirus solutions.
Windows has been a more common target in the past for malware due to its widespread use. Windows Defender is included as a built-in antivirus solution, and users can also install third-party antivirus software.
Linux has fewer malware threats compared to Windows, but is not immune. Linux systems benefit from a more secure architecture, and the use of antivirus software on Linux is less common.
It's crucial to note that the security of any operating system depends on user practices, timely updates, and adherence to security best practices. Additionally, the threat landscape evolves over time, and the security status of each operating system can change based on emerging vulnerabilities and the responses of their respective development communities. Updates and patches play a crucial role in maintaining the security of operating systems. They are essential for addressing vulnerabilities, fixing bugs, and improving overall system stability. You might be thinking, how is this relevant? What is the impact on security? What do I need to take away from this? Here are a few not-so-small ways this directly affects you.
First of all, updates and patches are crucial for mitigating known vulnerabilities. Cybersecurity threats often target outdated software, so keeping the operating system and applications up to date helps reduce the risk of exploitation.
Exactly. Also, updates address not only security vulnerabilities, but also general software bugs. Fixing these bugs contributes to the overall stability and performance of the operating system.
Some updates may introduce new security features or improvements to existing security mechanisms, providing a more robust defense against evolving threats.
Okay, so in some ways they are not so different at all. Patches and updates are important across the board. What about security software? Thank you all for your help with this. While these points highlight some operating system-specific considerations, it's crucial to recognize that the overall goal of information security remains consistent across all platforms. Users and administrators should follow best practices, stay informed about security threats, and tailor security measures to the specific features and characteristics of the operating system they are using. Hopefully, this information helps explain the difference between the different operating systems that you might find when you're looking for a computer. Also, check out episode 1, which includes a video with tips for choosing a good computer. If you have questions, post them below and let us know.
We answer all questions. If you found this content valuable, please like, share with your friends, and subscribe.